Clive Coates is a master of wine. I'm going to ask him to explain what that means just a little bit later. But we caught up with Clive because he's doing special events here at the Savoir Fair at Nemacolin and Woodlands Resort, where we are this weekend. But the first thing I want to ask Clive is, how did he become such an expert in wine?
Well, the first answer I'd say to that is that I don't really consider myself an expert. I think I know more about wine than obviously most of the people listening to this program. And that is as a result of having been a wine merchant for 20 years and having been a wine writer for more than 20 years after that, and having spent a lot of time, quite frankly, opening bottles and tasting wine and going round to the wine districts and talking to the people who make the wine, understanding their personality, trying to find out what they're doing and why. And, 40 years experience of drinking makes you slightly more of an expert than you were 40 years before when you started off.
And this Master of Wine qualification, what does that represent? How do you get to be one of those?
In England, we have a series of professional qualifications, like going up a ladder, that you can take if you're in the wine business, or a wine journalist, or indeed a hotelier, or anything like that. We don't exclude anybody. But it's basically about an exam about running a wine business. You have to obviously be able to assess a wine, recognize wines. There are practical parts of the examination, but there are also theory parts. You not only do you have to know how wine is made and how it is marketed, but all the other background that you need. As I say, quite simply, it's an exam about running a wine business. It's been going for more than 50 years now, and we have currently somewhere like 270 masters and lady masters, and now we have masters of wine all over the world. I believe there's something like 28 or so in the US of A.
Do any names, can you bring any names to mind in the United States, Clive?
Mary Ewing Mulligan, who runs the International Wine School, I think it's called, or International Wine Center in New York. She was certainly the first American lady master. There are various other people, a man called Roger Bromish, who used to run Frederick Wildman in the USA. Quite a number of people, obviously, and some who I don't actually know. But most of them are in the importing business or in the wine commentary business, in terms of being a wine advisor.
Now, let's change direction just a little bit. There's so much wine in the world. So when you're playing favorites, do you play favorites? Do you have favorite areas and favorite wines?
I am an unreconstructed Francophile. I spent the best part of 20 years as a merchant seeking out wines, particularly wines from the less well-known areas. I was a bit of a pioneer in this respect. There are about four or five wines from rather obscure parts of France that I was the first to import into England. But obviously I tackled the great wines of Bordeaux and Burgundy and the Rhone and the Loire and all the rest of it. And I have to say, I like French wines. I find them more interesting, more complex, more profound, and above all, compared with the wines of the rest of the world, or most of the rest of the world, they're a lot more food-friendly. The French have been making wine for 2,000 years. They're beginning to get it right, you could say. And the wine and the food in that same region have evolved in parallel with one another. This is not to denigrate wines of California or anywhere else, but I do feel with some of those, they're made to be highly rated when they're very young, rather than to be drunk with wine and food, to be drunk with food and friends when they're mature.
Okay, so now here's the $64,000 question to wrap up the interview. What about Robert Parker and numbers like 91 and 99 and 100? What do you think about that, Clive?
I think, first of all, to answer the second part of the question, whether you mark out of 100 or whether you mark out of some other number, I tend to mark out of 20, like they do at Davis, UC Davis, and indeed like everybody else in Britain, we're just used to marking out of 20. Whether you mark out of 20 or you mark out of 100 doesn't really make any difference. It becomes quite clear fairly soon that, if you like, as far as I'm concerned, 15 is good, 17 and a half is fine, 20 is fantastic. In the Parker score, let's say 88 is good, 91 is fine, and 99 or 100 is fantastic. That's easy to find out. Now, I have the greatest respect for Robert Parker. I think he is a workaholic. As far as wine is concerned, he has probably done more than anybody else in America to encourage Americans to drink wine, and he's been justly honored by the French government for doing so. There's only one thing that, or two things that worry me. The first is that he has a great deal of power in this country. That's not his fault. It's the fault of the wine trade. They buy wines that he's given good marks to. They sell wines on the Parker points. So he has a great deal of power to influence the markets. And that means that one person's taste has an undue influence on the market. And I think that is wrong, because taste is a very subjective sort of thing, a very personal sort of thing, a very temperamental sort of thing. And you can like one glass of wine with one particular dish, another goes best with a second, and so on and so forth. And we have to remember that I have my taste, Parker has his taste, you've got your taste, and it's far better that you should buy what you like than what you think you ought to like, because Clive Coates or Robert Parker gives it a high mark. So, as I say, those two things in parallel, this idea that there is only one way of looking at wine, which is sometimes the inference that I get from Parker's writings, and the power that he has, that worries me. But we can live without it. We can live with it.
So what should we say? Cheers or bottoms up? Which is it?
I would say bon appétit et large soif.